And now it's time for your financial destination with Roger Hamilton, with strategies to enhance or improve your retirement income.
Hello, I'm Roger Hamilton, and welcome to the Financial Destination Show. So for the next 20 minutes, we'll discuss strategies, some ideas to help you improve your investments, enhance your retirement income. In the case of today's show, help you reduce or defer your taxes. And our focus today is on the capital gains tax. And with us to explain that, Richard Lanzat from Summa Financial in Dartmouth. It's going to be Quiz the Tax Whiz segment here. Richard, welcome once again, Richard Lanzat, to our show.
Thank you for having me again.
Great to have you back on here in April, and we're going to play this show probably again in May and June, but it is busy tax season. Great to have you with us once again. So the first thing I guess we'll talk about a couple weeks ago, the recent federal budget. Anything that new came out that you saw or didn't come out?
Yeah, there's a couple of good things, but since we are talking about capital gains, maybe I'll start off by saying what's not in the budget, which is an increase in the inclusion rate of the capital gains tax.
They didn't change it yet.
You know, there's always the buzz around that they're going to at some point, but it's still 50% inclusion rate.
I noticed back capital gains is for those people. It started in 1972. It was 50%, then up to 1990. It stayed that way. In the 90s, it went to 75%. And back in 2000, they dropped it back to 50% inclusion rate. It's been that way now for 22 years, but there's been a $225 billion government debt to pay back the emergency benefits program the past 2 years. So someday we're going to have to pay that back, but not yet. The capital gains is still at 50%.
Correct.
How is capital gains calculated? And what is it, I guess, really?
Well, capital gains is the gain that you have when you sell something. So you pick a house, a rental property, stocks, bonds, even your coin collection. Everything that you sell has a gain to it based on what you bought it for, or loss in that matter.
At a certain value, you've made money. You have to share that profit.
The government wants their piece out of that profit.
And correct. To find out what your capital gains is, it's best to talk to your tax specialist. You can guess, but guessing doesn't work.
Correct. And because there is a calculation involved, and it's not just as simple as I bought something for $100, sold it for $200, I got a $100 gain. Well, how do you calculate what you bought something for? It's called the adjusted cost base. And there's other things that go into your cost base other than just your what you bought it for. For example, if you bought a property, you would take what you bought it for, but then the deed transfer tax. That would be something that's added to your cost base.
To your advantage.
To your advantage.
So it's not just simply I bought a rental property or bought a property back in the 90s for $100,000, sold it last week for $400,000. It's simply not a $300,000. I need more calculation than that.
Correct. And that's why you should see your accountant to make sure that you've included everything in your cost base, because if you fail to include something, it increases your gain and you're going to pay tax on it.
So write-downs, write-offs, renovations, things that you might have done all those years.
Exactly.
And you want to keep that lower. I know one of the things we talk about, a lot of clients that I have coming on, they're in their 60s and 70s, and they finally sold their property. They're going to hang on for a while, but someone just offered them $100,000 more than they could have imagined a year ago. And one or more of them, I have to find out two things from the first thing. Find out from your accountant, what is the capital gains? First off, after the debt's been paid on it, what is the capital gains on it? And then what is your RSP room? Because the first thing you can do is put money into your RSP to lower and defer that tax. If one or both of you are under 71, then the rest of the money will go into tax-free, which becomes your income. And if you have more after that, that'll go into a non-registered tax-efficient fund that you do pay money capital gains on. But every time you take the money out of your tax-free, of course, you'll replenish that with your non-registered money. And yes, your RSP someday will turn into a RIF, but that's only taxed on the income. It gives you more years of growth. Why pay capital gains if you don't have to? Make sure you see your accountant. That's the number I need to start off with, and the RSP room. So that's where you guys come in first. I'll take it from there. So that's kind of the investment strategy, how to reduce your tax. Now, people talk about, well, there's no tax on my personal property, but there is on my rental property, but no capital gains on what's called principal residence or property. Tell me about that, the principal residence rule.
Right. So in the capital gains environment, you have to calculate the gain and the purchase price and all of that on anything you dispose of. But within the tax rules, you can either defer or eliminate some of that capital. And one of the eliminations is because of the principal residence. If you've lived in the house, it's your principal residence, whether it's what you lived in all the time, or even a cottage can be designated as your principal residence. And the idea is any gain that's associated with that principal residence on sale is eliminated. You have an exemption to that gain. Now, again, see your accountant, because there's a lot of different rules and elections that need to be done in the year that you sell the property, but more importantly, over the years. You mentioned earlier about 30 years and the inclusion rates, and just because of that, there's different inclusion rates, or maybe it wasn't your principal residence during part of that time period. So you designate your principal residence and elect it, do the election every year. So it could be 2 years out of 20 that it was not your principal residence, and then there's a small amount of gain that you would have to declare.
So if you had like a duplex, and I'm going to live in half and rent out half, and then I sold all of it, and or maybe I've moved from the home back to the cottage, so then I can make my cottage my principal residence?
Correct. So one designation per year.
Per family, not per person.
Right, and that changed, I think it was in the early 80s, that it was per person, so your spouse could have had a different principal residence, but then that changed, and definitely go see your accountant.
I would imagine so. Yeah, just have two different. So one time, yeah, I'm sure the government said, no, we can't have you know, no tax on the house and the cottage, just the family, one of you.
Right.
That's where you're going to be. Is there a time frame you have to live there to be principal residence?
Well, that was actually proposed in the budget. So they are considering a 12-month rule, but that's not in effect yet. So up until now, you could have lived in it for 6 months or even less. Again, you have to claim what is reasonable to the government. So if they feel it's not reasonable for some reason, then they could still declare it as a gain, and you'd have to pay on it. But I've had clients that have lived in the principal residence for only 8 months and got the principal residence exemption.
So if they're lucky on the housing flip, I bought this, stayed 8 months, made a big $100,000, bought another place, did well with that. All that at this point is still capital gains exemption.
And the rules that they're looking at bringing in is 12 months. And if you live in it less than 12 months, and again, there's exceptions to even this, then it's full income. It's not even capital gain income. It's full income.
They're going to ding you for all the gains.
Because they think you're flipping a house, yeah, and they think you're in business of flipping a house.
And that's not part of your income.
And that's not part of your income. Right. The other important thing to talk about principal residence, it is an election. You have to declare it on your personal tax return now. And if you don't, they could deny the exemption. So it's very important that you declare this in the year that you sell it. Even if it is your principal residence, no tax, that's fine. But you have to declare it.
That you sold your home.
That you sold your home. Correct.
And so they can, don't come back, isn't there's a time frame that they can come back and come
right
after you later.
You can ask for an amendment, but they could deny that amendment.
All right. Good to know. And again, for everyone, even on your investments, but on the taxes, go see a tax specialist, because everyone's case is going to be different, and all the different write-offs and things that have happened the last 10, 20, 30 years. Okay, we're going to be back in just a moment with more tax tips with Richard Lanzat right after this.
Welcome to your Financial Destination Show, an educational investment series hosted by Roger Hamilton, featuring strategies to enhance your retirement income. During his 10 years as a financial advisor, Roger has provided sound advice on how to improve personal investments to hundreds of people, many of whom are Seaside FM listeners. To discuss how to improve your investments, email Roger at roger@yourfinancialdestination.ca. Visit yourfinancialdestination.ca or call 902-499-5879.
On the Financial Destination Show, we want you to become more educated, knowledgeable, and comfortable with your investments. Check your results over the past 5 years. Do you feel they should have done better? What would you change to improve performance over the next 5 years? Tune in every Thursday morning at 9:15 to hear more on how to improve your retirement income.
And we're back with Richard Lanzat, Chartered Accountant, President, Summa Financial, here in Dartmouth. First off, Richard, how can listeners contact you?
You can contact me by going to our website. It's probably the easiest place. All our contact information is there, and it's summafinancial.ca, S-U-M-M-A, financial.ca.
Very good. So continuing our topic today on capital gains, and the second half of the show, we're to talk about, I guess, strategies to help you reduce or defer capital gains. So I'm going to bring up the headline, and you take it away. Here we go. Some 7 or 8 strategies. So year-end strategies, like selling a property on December 31, I guess you can defer that tax for later on.
Correct. So if you're in the process of selling property, it could be stocks or a house or anything for that matter, and you're doing it close to the end of the calendar year, then maybe push it off if you know that there's a huge gain. Push it off to the beginning of the new calendar year, in January or something like that, and then that defers the actual payment of the tax for roughly 16 months. You get your 12-month calendar year plus filing in April. So you can do that if you have... if you've triggered large gains because you sold some of your stock portfolio earlier in the year and you happen to have a stock maybe that's losing money, it might be prudent to sell that loss or trigger the loss on that stock in order to offset the gain from earlier in the year. So there's some planning strategies you can definitely do.
Got it. So how to split capital gains? So can you place the property? I'm going to put these three properties in my, assuming my wife's name, she has a lower income, and she can claim the capital gains and I don't have to. Can I split the capital gains, shelter it that way?
So you, if, yes, in a sense, you have to plan for this earlier, especially if it's a rental property. If you are the higher earner spouse and you have a lower earner spouse, then the idea makes sense because I'm already going to be taxed at the high rate, my spouse would be taxed at the low rate. However, Revenue Canada has looked at this situation.
They've thought of that too.
They've already thought about it, and attribution rules apply. So the higher income earner spouse would have to declare that income personally. However, if you create a bona fide loan to your spouse, interest rate, payment, all of that, then yes, the lower earner spouse could then claim a portion of that income.
So I loan her money at a nominal rate.
The down payment. So you loan your lower earner spouse the amount of money for a down payment, and then they can claim it.
And by you being the bank, you can claim that or deduct that.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. Can you put earnings, we talked about tax shelters like RRSPs and tax-free earlier, but you could actually, you could put money in something like for an RESP or another for your children or grandchildren. You don't get the tax deduction, but I guess it's a way to shelter some money?
You definitely can shelter money. Anything that can earn income in a tax-deferred manner is a benefit. Whole life policies, another reason. You know, you could talk to your financial planner about life insurance. Whole life policies defer the income inclusion on the income, so that the gain, the dividends that the life policies create, can earn in a tax-deferred manner.
Offset, we talked a bit about capital losses, so I guess explain the offset of capital losses.
So losses, if you had a capital gain in a previous year and you had a loss this year, you can carry back that loss for 3 years. So if you had gains previously, lost this year, and I carry it back, I'm going to get a refund.
So I made a lot of money last year. I got taxed on it this year. Fortunately or unfortunately, my stocks were down. There's a loss, but at least I can claim that and offset the
Correct.
Tax I paid the year before.
And similarly, if I had a loss in a previous year, they're carried forward indefinitely. So if I had a loss in a previous year, a gain this year, my losses could offset my gain.
We don't like losses, but that is the thing. I guess the more money you make, the more taxes you pay. And if you make less, there's less tax. It goes that way.
Correct.
Deferring capital gains. We kind of touched about that, but deferring capital gains.
So when you sell a property, capital property, you usually receive full payment.
Right.
If by chance, for some reason, you take a note back, so I sold the property for $50,000, I get $10,000, and I defer $40,000. Over time, then I can defer the gain on that $40,000 over time. So $10,000 this year, $10,000 next year, $10,000 the year after.
I see. So if I sold, I sold something for $400,000. I trust this place. I'm buying it. It was buying it from me. Don't give me $400,000, Bob. Give me $100,000 for the next 4 years. I have lowered my tax per year for the next 4 years.
That's correct.
And you can do that.
Correct. It's a reserve. So what you're doing is you're showing the full sale and profit, but then you get a capital reserve for those years.
Lifetime capital gain exemption. What is that?
So this, we could probably spend a whole show on this one alone, but this is for a small business owner who has sold his shares in his company.
Okay.
Or farm, by that matter, but mostly it refers to the sale of shares of your capital or your company, and you have up to roughly $900,000 exemption limit. So if I sold my shares, had a $900,000 profit, I can get that $900 tax-free.
A family-owned type business?
Family-owned business or farm.
You could donate shares to charity. I don't have anybody to leave this money to, but I want to leave it to somebody and not the government. I guess I can set a charity in my shares and get a tax break?
Yes. So the inclusion rate, so if I donated the stocks, so you have to donate the stock. You can't sell the stock and then donate the
okay.
money. You have to donate the stock. There's still a capital gains calculation like we do normally, but your inclusion rate is zero.
Okay. And the person getting that stock, they have to pay a capital gains?
No, it's the charity.
The charity.
So they don't.
That's
right.
enough.
Right.
Using capital gain reserve, what is that?
So the capital gain reserve is what I talked about previously, is the where you sell it and... You sell it for today, but you receive the payment over
later.
Time.
Okay.
Then, so you're deferring.
I don't want all of it right now, later.
Yeah.
And that is common? People do that?
That's... Yeah. I mean, if you're selling it to a family member
yeah.
or somebody that you're comfortable with, then
because you
yes.
want to be assured. Most right. I want the money today, most of
right.
us. But no, I'll pay over the yeah. course of time. That works tax-wise, provided you are guaranteed of that money.
Right.
Okay. Those are some tax strategies. So we talked about the budget earlier, what wasn't in it. What was something that was in it that brought your attention?
So there's a couple of good things that are in the budget or proposed to be in the budget. But since we're talking about real estate, there's the tax-free first home savings account. So this is the ability for an individual who's never owned a home before or hasn't owned a home in the last 5 years. They can contribute up to $8,000 a year for 5 years to get to a $40,000 investment account. And the $8,000 per year is tax deductible, and it's not taxed when it's withdrawn.
So hybrid tax-free RSP sort of program to help
Correct.
You get that first home buyer.
Correct. In addition, there's another thing that they've come into the budget that they're proposing, and it's a first-time home buyer's tax credit amount to $10,000. So that provides up to $1,500 in direct support to home buyers. Additionally, there's a home accessibility tax credit up to $20,000. This will mean tax credits of up to $3,000 depending, and increases the previous tax credit that was $1,500 in previous years. So there's a couple of really good things. One more is a multi-generational home renovation tax credit, and this provides up to $7,500 in support for constructing a secondary suite for a senior or an adult with a disability. So just so that everybody understands, the $40,000 tax-free first home is a deduction against income, and the rest are credits. So credits are worth less than deduction. So if you can do a little bit of either one of them, definitely for first-time home buyers, this is a great thing.
And these are all starting right now with the budget?
Yeah, some of these start in 2023, so it just depends when it's legislated. So do ask your accountant about it.
Again, see your tax specialist. So once again, thank you, Richard, for coming in today's show. I know you're busy, but appreciate your time coming in today. This show will be on my website in a few weeks. You can visit yourfinancialdestination.ca. I'll also probably play the show a second time in May or June to hear it again. Again, how can listeners contact you?
They can reach me at our website, sumafinancial.ca, S-U-M-M-A financial.ca.
And if anybody out there has some tax questions or investment questions you could like for us to talk about on the air, you can contact me as well. Email roger@yourfinancialdestination.ca or call 902-499-5879. So once again, we thank you for listening today, and hopefully you've learned something you can use to help you improve your investments and reduce your taxes. This is Roger Hamilton. Until next time, stay safe and stay invested.